Goes into the computer, but because this is Olympus, I have to convert it from Windows Media to MP3. All right, this is a whole series of talks that is way too brief for the size of the subject. It's the evolutionary creation. Tonight will be introductory. In the sphere of our interhuman interactions, things are very hard to understand. Interactions are obviously not a matter of reason or information, because we do so many things with each other without thinking or without knowledge or without education, and we don't know what the facts of the matter are that we exchange about. Love is also not the motive of most people most of the time, including professed Christians. In the name of Christ, we do terrible things, heinous things to each other. Probably the most common mismotivations in our interactions with each other is opinion. Opinion may be correct or it may be incorrect. But even if it is correct, it is a matter of ego bolstering or of personal defense or something like that. We believe we have something at stake in our opinions, and the validity and the value of our very being depends or rests on our dubious opinions, which is a pretty, you know, we've all been in those kinds of arguments. Sometimes the stance that we take, the opinion that we express, is not completely incorrect, and it's not completely uneducated or unfounded. Very often we only see part of the truth, but we know the part that we know is true, so we are certain in it, and we defend, and we even attack or counterattack in defending what we believe is the truth, as if we had the whole truth. We seem to have an attitude that what we know is enough to stand for the whole truth. Then, since we're so insecure and so egoistic, we identify ourselves with our beliefs. I believe this or I believe that. And when that happens, our sense of self is weakened, and with identification, there is always a weakening sense of self. When this happens, anybody who believes differently than us is an enemy, and we have to deal with them as enemies. We have attitudes where we jump to conclusions on partial evidence, and we cling offensively and defensively to our outlook, and this kind of activity pervades much of our cultural atmosphere. We find it in politics especially, we find it in religion, we find it in art. We are a very adversarial people because of personal identification. Now, one of the most fascinating struggles of this type is the struggle between Darwinistic evolution and creationism, which is now called intelligent design. These two views are extremely polarized and extremely antagonistic to each other, and the adherents of both of them are quite outspoken. And each of them believes that acceptance of their given views are vital to the progress of humanity. There's, you know, it's a no holds barred, it's one way or the other kind of difference. Darwinism and the evolutionary views like it are based on materialistic science. Not science in general, but materialistic science. And materialistic science has many beliefs and many assumptions that it makes. And one of the most basic of those assumptions is that matter, as we know matter, which the Rosicrucian philosophy would call the chemical subdivision of the physical world, is the origin of everything. Our thoughts, our emotions, and even what we think are intuitions are really the result of interactions of matter. Very intricate and sophisticated interactions of matter, but that nonetheless. From a mystical point of view, they are confusing the consequence with the cause, but we'll get to that along the way. This means that even the things that we find most awe-inspiring, things like beauty and things like that, the experience of beauty is a result of the interactions of matter. But there's something even much more problematic about that, because what we call the experience of truth, what we call proof, what we call evidence or understanding of evidence, all of those things are a consequence of the interactions of matter. Which means an adherent of this point of view has put him or herself into a box that the points of view are a result of a deterministic materialism and not as a consequence of a truth knower. That's a tough place to be in. This is what Eddie was referring to today when he talked about the Einstein quote. The most, what was it? The most
incomprehensible thing about the cosmos is that it's comprehensible.
Yes, yes. That sounds like a pre-mystical state. He's just about ready to come to that conclusion. Of course, the statements we've just made about materialism are very simplified. And what the scientists do is highly sophisticated. But the sophistication is not getting to basic truths. The sophistication often is a means to dodge the truth and to not face the kind of issues that we're looking at now. Now, the materialistic approach, the evolutionary approach, begins with sensory experience. And sensory experience, especially when it is tested and retested and corroborated, seems indubitable. And it progresses from without on the understanding of things that happen outside of us. So there is no subjectivity. Whatever metaphysics there is not a priori. It's something that comes much later. It's an add-on. After there's all of this success with technology and all of the things that have come out of science, it's a pretty good bet that we must be right. Now, Darwinism and the views of evolution that are like Darwinism is based on many very keen observations and inferences drawn from those factual observations. The examination of paleontology continues to this day. And in fact, there's more of it going on than at any other time. And the things that they can deduce from little facts, little artifacts of fossils and things like that, it's astounding. It's amazing. It's that those kind of deductions can be made. Moreover, as there are more and more observations, there is more and more concurrence about what is factual and what isn't in reality. Even the big picture that they have about evolution on Earth is it's agreed upon by them. Mysticism, of course, this is jumping way ahead, sees what they call evolution and what they draw from their paleontological studies is just one little piece out of the middle of the evolution. And they can't be faulted for knowing what they know. It's just that they don't know that there's much, much more that is what they know is part of. So there is plenty with the narrow scope of view that the Darwinists have to fortify their opinion that their views are correct. Completely correct. Creationism, or intelligent design, as we know it in Christianity, is based on the opening chapters of the book of Genesis in our Bible. It is based on faith and on belief about what the faith means. Faith is probably perfectly all right, but the belief that it is a certain way is where the problem comes in. Now, since those chapters in the Bible are very brief and very abbreviated, and especially since they are symbolic, the brevity of them leads one to a miraculous creation. 7 days of creation, diurnal days like the ones we have now. And the first two creation stories in the book of Genesis do not agree with each other. In one, humans are the first thing created, and in the other, humans are the last thing created. But this doesn't bother people. I don't understand that, but they don't. But you know, they don't have the esoteric understanding of why it is that way. Now, there are valid mystical explanations for these differences, and hopefully, maybe somewhere along the line in these talks, we will get to them. The faith and the willingness of creationists to believe. They're as marvelous as the carefulness of the observation and deduction of the materialist scientists. It's not something, you know, the kind of willingness to believe is not these days taken as a great value to have, but nonetheless, it's quite a remarkable thing. What happens is that the people who are adherents of this view don't think a lot about them, because even too much thinking is considered demonic. You must be of the devil if you're questioning these things and trying to understand. And what happens is that these people do go to church, they pray, they have inward experiences that they know are good and that they are spiritually nourishing to them. And what they do is they take the whole the whole thing that is given to them as being true. And so they hang on to the whole thing. There is an acceptance of divine authority without any question. And that's a virtue. It's probably as much of a virtue as skepticism is to the scientist. These two sides of this particular issue are extremely polarized, and they are extreme such that compromise is not likely at all, not even in the smallest of things. This is again because people are identified with it. And when someone is identified, the identity gives itself over to that with which it is identified. And then with that, one doesn't have to be as responsible to oneself. And so the entrenchment becomes deeper and deeper. When that happens and the selfhood is weakened by identification, one of the consequences of that is it clings to something, and anything that is different from the very thing that it is clinging to is an enemy. It is a threat. It is a menace. Thus we have creationists who see material scientists as instruments of the devil, as atheists who want to destroy their spiritual heritage. Their religion even has fear as part of its makeup. God can dispense arbitrary justice and judgment. This is also so that it's so extreme, and I have literally heard this argument, that some creationists believe that when you find sea fossils way up in the mountains, they think that God put them there to test the faithful and to lead astray the misbelievers. It's it's quite hard to deal with. On the other side, the materialists believe that to look for purpose within things and to look for meaning behind the creation is just a self-fulfilling activity. It is a faulty pseudo-thinking that looks for and finds what it wants to find rather than having that rigorous objectivity that science does. The strife between these two sides is a psychological problem as much as it is a philosophical problem. When someone is deeply set in a specific psychological outlook, they become a type and they become fixed. So, for example, extreme introverts are suspicious and doubting about the external world. In the early days, thousands of years ago, the people were so introverted that they believed that the whole outer world was an illusion, and that the whole business was stacked against them. Extroverts love and trust external things, and they feel creepy and uncomfortable about inner things. They don't even like to be around people who are having inward experiences, and maybe not even be too emotional. To them, to be emotionless is almost an ideal. Material science, as we know it now, is extroversive. It believes that the truth is found in the things outside of us. The facts, just give me the facts. Religion, by its very nature, is introversive. The meaning and the truth is found within. Those facts out there don't mean anything unless you have the spirit of truth within yourself. So as long as we have these fixed and unbalanced psychologies, the debate cannot be resolved. People of faith will always be suspicious of analytical people who may be of the devil, and people of knowledge and analysis will always be skeptical of anything beyond empirical things that they can't touch or anything like that. And they'll be afraid of being drawn into superstition. The ultimate grounds of both of these views seem preposterous. To think that everything we see around us in the world, all of the human accomplishments, are the results of a series of accidents whose consequences are carried out according to blind natural laws is pretty much absurd. It's equally absurd to find that science and technology and all the things that it spawns that are so correct and work so well is completely wrong about evolution is also absurd. Some people who are doubting analysis may think it's of the devil. And even to argue logically and be rationally convincing is the same. Other people think that belief without evidence is completely wrong. Now, both sides claim they are right. And to some extent, both sides are right. It's just, again, one of those matters of incomplete knowledge. To resolve the two faces of this one coin, in this series of talks, we're going to examine the evolutionary creation as taught in Christian mysticism, which is another name for Rosicrucian Christianity. The layout of the evolutionary creation in a very skeletal form is given to us by the elder brothers of the Rosicrucian order, who are extremely highly developed, adept spiritual beings. The Rosicrucian order is a mystery school that exists in the inner worlds. It is comprised of initiates and adepts. In order to be a member of the Rosicrucian order, one must be initiated. And to be initiated, one must be able to leave the dense physical body and the outer world behind, and to have enough soul power so that one can be consciousness in the inner worlds and do the initiatory work. Initiatory work is purgatorial for both character building and moral purification, and for the purpose of harvesting soul material, which is necessary to take soul flights. The initiatory work also stratifies and organizes the soul body, the vital body, as the vehicle of consciousness when someone is away from the physical body. In the Rosicrucian initiation, one sees one's past in evolutionary history and sees that relative to the current state of consciousness and at various steps in between, so one can see a continuous development of consciousness from past evolutionary experiences. Our work consists of awakening latent spiritual abilities. So initiation is not a ceremony. It depends completely on merit and ability and the skills that one has all directed to higher abilities.